and evaluation. Sometimes I see small letters as an administration, small letters. I don't know, some of the people we had in the morning are not around now. But we will I am informed that last time I make a mistake that the DG has apologized. He is indicating that is not where he wrote his apology. Yeah. He is indicating that he is not well. Please be informed that he's been booked off and therefore requested Ms. Gasser, Nolan Gasser, to attend and present on his behalf. Okay. We have invited the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation to present to us the development indicators. Honourable members, we have these reports, these important reports, you know, development indicators. I'm sure soon we'll be getting the MPETs. And these reports, you know, they are discussed as within the committee. I wish this report could be tabled in the House, but well, as we all know that this session, there are not many sittings. There are very few sittings, so it is going to be difficult to it's going to be difficult to pass to have this important report tabled in the House, but that is what we would like to do. Just before we also received an apology from the minister. So maybe I need to from the minister only. That is the apology that we received. Ray indicates that he would have loved to be part of the meeting. However, he is not able to do so. This report these apologies they are written, they are not written by ministers or they are written by staffers or officials, you know, maybe something that we just need to understand. Before I allow Ms. Gasser to address us, age is catching up with some of us. But I know that amongst the people that are accompanying the PDG is Miss Bonnie Ramayla, whom we know
Honorable Chairperson, good afternoon, honorable members and to colleagues. Perhaps before I begin, as the Chairperson indicated, I should just take a moment to introduce the relatively new colleague who's sitting on my left. All I will say is indicate where he is, and then he will just briefly introduce himself. But he has just recently joined the Deputy Minister's office. He is the head of staff there, and he is most welcome by us. So maybe he can just briefly introduce himself so you can hear his voice.
greetings, Honorable Chairperson. Greetings, Honorable Members. My name is Hizo Ngobo. I'm the executive head in the office of the Deputy Minister, Governance Monitoring and Evaluation. Also to take this time to indicate to the chair and to the committee that the deputy minister will no longer be joining us. He was requested to join him in an agent meeting in the chair office now.
No, thank you, Chairperson. If I may proceed, because Ms. Ramaila, as the Chairperson indicated, is known in this committee. In front of us for today is the Development Indicators 2012, and we've also prepared what is deceptively a short slide. There are about 12. I want to apologize upfront for the delay in submitting the presentation and the circulation of the report. To address that, what I've prepared is a presentation where I will pause at certain points and make specific reference to the thematic areas as covered in the development indicators and take you through certain pages, just to enable honorable members to have a fuller picture of what this development indicators report does. As the Chairperson indicated, this is work that we've been handling as the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation for some time now. It comes from the era when we had the PKF in the presidency, and it's work that we have taken on board as DPME. The presentation you see today has also been tabled to Cabinet exactly in the same format, and the intention is to table it for honorable members' input and guidance going forward. Essentially, the main purpose of the indicators is to enable us as South Africa to measure the impact of our policies and also examine the extent to which the work that's been done, especially since 1994, is beginning to have an impact on the lives of our people. What distinguishes this development indicators 2012 from the original and other development indicators is that if you open the previous indicators, they would just definitely go straight to the specific development indicators which we have been tracking over time. When we tabled this to Cabinet a couple of months ago, the key recommendation that arose from that submission was that we needed to go back with the development indicators 2012, and unlike before, for each thematic area or per grouping of a set of indicators, begin to reflect what it is our country inherited 19 years ago in 1994. So for the reference for honorable members and colleagues, if you open page 4 of the report, you will notice that as indicated in the slide, it says 85 indicators grouped in 10 themes, with the first theme being economy and employment. If you look at page 4 then, it is a reflection of what we believe the country inherited in 1994, using the evidence that we have managed to put together. Now, for those of us that are relatively familiar with the indicators, we will just know that looking at page 3, for example, there are the 10 themes that are outlined, and all of them seek to group the 85 indicators as I've mentioned. What distinguishes this one is every time before you move into a particular thematic area, it outlines what the country inherited in 1994. This is per the directive of cabinet when we table this, and in many ways it has contributed to the development indicators PEST being released a little bit later, because much as it is a lived experience of us, what we inherited in 1994, we believe that we needed to reflect on the evidence base and what it said. We needed to research what the key outputs in these areas were saying about what the country inherited in 1994. So, Chairperson, if members please bear with me, throughout the presentation, as I make a certain point, I will start by taking us to the thematic areas introduction and just highlight a set or two for ease of reference, and then use the next slides of presentation to illustrate my point or raise a particular matter for discussion later. What I would also like to highlight in page 3, which is still relatively new and is perhaps not so common in other development indicators, is the reflection on the transport infrastructure of the country and the energy profile in South Africa, which are listed as in page 101 and 102. For members who might wonder where ICT services and all that is covered, we look at it in the area of economic growth and transformation. And we take or make the point that there has been some improvement in terms of telephony. We reflect briefly on mobile coverage and the whole range of other things. So I think I'll just pause briefly to be sure we are all on the same page and then continue. Thank you, Honourable Member. It's in page 101 and 103. It says part of the annexure. Yes. Yes, it says part of the annexure. Yes. But perhaps in terms of discussing how the development indicators evolve over time, there's also a discussion we should have about how we begin to reflect on the infrastructure field program of the country, the roads, strides being made in this area and going forward. All right. So then what this slide seeks to do is to give an indication of what informs these development indicators. And essentially now I'm on slide number 3. What we do as DPME is we source government and administrative databases to inform these development indicators. We also look at official statistics, primarily from STATSSA, and you will notice as you go through the development indicators report that we also make reference to work done by local and international institutions. For example, we make specific reference to work done by STATSSA. We make specific reference to work done by an institution like the HSRC. We also make specific reference to work that's done to compare South Africa's performance against the educational indicators, for example, in the form of SACMEC, and we make reference to that. We then embark on an intensive quality assurance process where if there are certain indicators or data sets where we've got significant quality concerns are chucked out so that we ensure that there is consistency in analysis and reporting. For colleagues and honorable members who would want to get additional information on what we report here, there are extensive disaggregated data on our website that gives you the room and the opportunity to interrogate some of the information we've used to inform this development indicator. And through you, Chairperson, for honorable members that have been on some of the study tours with us across the spread of the land, from Malaysia right up into the US, Washington, African countries, we will know, even if in our engagements with institutions like the World Bank, that the tendency or the commitment to producing development indicators is a worldwide phenomenon. And it's used across the world to look at how countries perform and whether the work that gets done has the desired impact. For example, for colleagues that went recently to Kenya and Uganda, they returned with copies of work, similar work they've done in those countries to basically tap into what is the impact of what is being done by both government and private sector institutions in the lives of our people. The target audience is yourself, it's the executive, it's senior managers in government, and as the chairperson alluded to this earlier on, we distribute this very widely. Following our presentation here, because we are presenting this before it gets officially released by the minister in about a week or two's time, we will then be circulating this throughout parliament, the executive and private sector grouping. What we will also speak about later, which Ms. Ramaila can add on as the head of communications, are plans that we have underway following guidance from cabinet, our minister and the deputy minister, are plans that we have in place for launching this week. Essentially what we are proposing is a release to the media, but as we've heard in the past, a reflection by different sector experts who will interrogate some of the assertions or reports or findings that we make as part of this development indicators report. So as appropriate, we will send an official communication in this regard so that if it is possible, there is representation. This work, this work supplements other key M&E products. Essentially, it's the work that we've done around the web-based program of action website and how we reflect on performance around a select number of outcome indicators, key outputs, targets, etc. Colleagues and honorable members will notice that there are some interlinkages in what we track as part of the outcomes work and what is reflected here in the development indicators. We also use this information to inform site visits that are organized by the minister, the president, the deputy minister. And the reflection on 19 years comes at a very opportune time when we are, as a department, working on the 20-year review, which will be released later this year. And I believe that this work has also got significant implications for our national evaluation program, because essentially what honorable members will appreciate is that a development indicator is a reflection of where the country is at a given point in time. It does not begin to interrogate why certain things are in a particular way. It does analyze and say a trend is going this way and these may be some of the factors, but it doesn't go as in-depth as what maybe an evaluation or a specific outcomes monitoring work would do. And so to the extent that the two can be used to inform the other, that is welcome. Moving on to slide 5, which means that then we move to the section that I took you earlier on to slide 4. And essentially what I would like to draw to your attention here regarding what we inherited in 1994, which is on page 4, is of course the progress or the narrative that we put forward around the slow GDP growth of the early 1990s and the negative real per capita GDP growth, and we've got slides to this effect. But what I would like to highlight perhaps is issues around the fact that the gross expenditure on R&D was quite low in 1994. It has significantly increased, but our view is that this still remains below a targeted goal of 1% of GDP. So if you look at the next set of pages in this section, they begin to make an indication of what drives this or what is the proper reflection on that. What we also highlight on page 4 are issues around the global isolation of the country as a result of the political policies of the time and the strides that have been made to address that going forward. And we also reflect on the racially and gender skewed representation in management and ownership which existed in 1994. And we begin to make certain points about the extent to which progress has been made in this regard. So if you then look at slide number 5, the reflection here is that notwithstanding some of the economic growth trends that we reflect on, the impact that the crisis of 2008-2009 had on the country and its economic growth, there are significant challenges that still remain, and there are still after effects from the crisis of 2008-2009, which, comparatively speaking, the country is beginning to bounce back, but there are still certain losses that have been made which we need to recover from. We acknowledge in the report that unemployment remains a major challenge, especially for the youth. And we also make reference to EPWP and the fact that while there is progress, it is slower than anticipated. And if you go through the report, we also make specific reference to the challenges and gains that have been made around the community worker program. So this thematic area could be argued that it's almost a bit of an indication of a mixed picture, where progress is made in some areas, but challenges, significant challenges remain, with unemployment becoming one of the main ones, even though some interventions have been made to address this. The next set of slides, then moving on to the next slide of 6, gives an indication of the poverty and inequality thematic area. If we look at the next section, it does what happened earlier on page 26. There is a reflection of what the country inherited in 1994. For example, we make references to the high poverty levels at the time. We make reference to the low living standards, especially amongst many Africans. We make reference to the high inequality that existed at the time. And as part of the second section of page 26, we make reference to where the country was at in terms of social assistance support in 1994. And essentially what we are mentioning there is the strides that have been made on the time, resulting in an instance where, as a country, we have reached over 15.5 million beneficiaries as at the 2011-2012 period. And then lastly, we reflect on opportunities and challenges thereof for people living with disabilities. And towards the end of that section, we begin to reflect on whether strides are being made in that regard and what opportunities exist for improving that. So in looking at the poverty and inequality, focusing on slide number 6, the main point that's being raised here is the fact that there is significant reduction in poverty levels, but income inequality remains especially stubborn. Honorable members are aware that at this point in time, our country is often defined or described as one of the most economically unequal countries with the Gini coefficient that remains a quite worrying. Now, if we look then at the slide, slide 6, it is simply spelled out, it's a categorization of people's socioeconomic status from a range of 1 to 10, with the lower figures referring to people who live in higher poverty levels, and those in 10 more higher income earning bracket and all that. And essentially the main point that's being made here is that there is a decline in terms of people with the lower, in the lower asset bracket, and there is an increase in the middle asset bracket, in the middle income status group, if I can place it like that, and there is a growing body or a segment or within the higher asset bracket, but it could be argued, as the slide indicates, that the greatest increase has been in the middle asset bracket range. We make references in the development indicators about the impact that the growth in social assistance grants has had in this, but we also make specific references to the opening up of the labor market to more people entering into the space, especially middle income professionals, and the impact that that has on the middle red or orange part of the slide. Moving on to the basic services and community assets section. If we could please turn to page 35 of the Development Indicators Report. Essentially, there we've gone to length to give an indication of what the country inherited in terms of the housing delivery system, the opportunities or limitations thereof for Africans in terms of the income exclusion or participation. We make reference to asset capital poverty and the extent to which the 1930 Act had in this regard. We make references to racial segregation and the creation of certain homelands and controlled self-managed labor reserves. We then move to the key point around housing backlog and what was inherited at the time. And certainly the other point we make is the ever-increasing backlog around housing issues. I think linked to issues around migration patterns, people moving to certain areas, and there are challenges that continue to remain around informal settlements. We then move on in page 35 to reflect on basic services, and we make specific reference to water, sanitation, and electricity issues. As I will explain later on, we make reference to progress that has been made in terms of what was inherited 19 years ago. And then lastly, we focus on land restitution and land redistribution and what the country inherited in 1994, with significant linkages to the housing element and reflecting on, as I mentioned earlier on, the Native Land Act. So then this slide in particular seeks to illustrate that further. It gives an indication of how over time since 1994 we have made significant strides in terms of access to water infrastructure. But as we indicate in the development in the development indicators report, functionality remains an area of concern. I think it is a point that we have tabled to honorable members before, where in addition certain concerns were raised about areas where there are pockets of poor functionality of infrastructure. So there is a tap or there is some infrastructure, but people can't access the service. We make reference to progress made around the 83.4 access to sanitation infrastructure over time. But as you will note when you have a moment in the report, we make reference to challenges that still remain around certain households still being on the bucket system, perhaps with specific reference to the Free States and challenges remaining in that regard. We make reference to the 3.8 million subsidized housing units that have been built over time, and we round off this slide by reflecting on what are some of the causes for the stalling or the sort of plateauing off or challenges in hitting over a 95% mark to get total access or moving over the 83.4 mark, and we make the point that there is a need for the strengthening of maintenance in certain places and the addressing of the quality and functionality issues that I raised earlier on. Chairperson, if we could move to slide 8, which then moves to health. And essentially there, the history of what we inherited is in page 42 in the development indicators. And there we reflect on disparities in terms of life expectancy at birth across the different racial groups in 1990, where if you looked at the specific definition of life expectancy, the number of years a newborn infant would live, if prevailing patterns of age-specific mortality rates at the time of birth were to stay the same throughout the child's life, If you looked at an African female's life expectancy rate in 1994 compared to perhaps another grouping, maybe in a white South African or Indian South African, there were huge disparities. And the point we make in the development indicators, if you look at page 43, it gives you an indication in the table there or the graph of almost a curve around the life expectancy. As honorable members would know, certain considerations in terms of what we are seeing in 2001, but the dip over the 2002 right up until the 2007 period is largely attributed, as the MRC report indicated in 2000 and later years, to the coexisting challenges of TB and HIV. And as you look at later years, as in 2009 onwards, there seems to be huge strides that are being made in terms of ensuring that South Africans are living for longer. What remains key then is how we continue to strengthen the health system so that what we have as health outcomes are commensurate with what as a country we spend or invest on the health sector, and that we hold our own with countries that spend the same or less in health. In infant mortality rate and the under 5 mortality rate, we make the same point around disparities across race and class lines, but we also reflect that significant progress in this being made in this regard. We attribute that primarily, of course, to the comprehensive HIV and AIDS program, the immunization coverage programs that the country has embarked on, and of course the well-received a prevention of HIV transmission from mother to child. And we also make the point that there's also been a response towards addressing a few of the other drivers of child mortality. With regard to tuberculosis, we give an indication of what happened in 1994, but essentially the point we make there is that we are beginning to make significant strides in terms of TB cure rates and defaulter rates, but we make the point that whilst the country has made good progress, we are not likely, at least at this point in time, to meet the target set worldwide by WHO and other organizations for an 85% cure rate. So, you know, there would need to be acceleration of effort. And then we close off this section by looking at interventions underway to strengthen the health system, and we make reference to the national health insurance, creation thereof and challenges thereof. It's perhaps fitting that in this section we look at issues around malnutrition, and as honorable members might be aware, the Sandhane's work has been launched today, or preliminary results have been launched today, looking at nutrition patterns among children and adults, and the case being made for what needs to be done to ensure that we've got the right nutrition levels going forward as a country. Moving on to education, what we inherited is in page 51. A lot has been said and discussed in this forum around the area of education. And so we start off the section in page 51 by indicating what disparities, fragmentation, and variations in quality and effectiveness was inherited in 1994. And certainly race and socioeconomic status was a factor. We then go into a little bit more detail if you look at the first part of page 51 as to where the disparities lay, from inequity in school funding, challenges around the learner education ratio, and challenges around adult literacy, and the extent to which we had a reasonable percentage of graduating science education and training students. We made the point then in slide 9 of progress that has been made regarding education, with perhaps the primary one being the increase in education budgets, indicative of, amongst other things, the centrality of education in taking the country forward and its importance in in ensuring a whole range of other things that are critical for sustainable development. And we make the point that the enrollment rates are excellent, are improving in the country. And we also make the point that there's been a doubling of grade R enrollments, as mentioned in the President's State of the Nation address, from 300,000 to over 700,000, which is a major achievement. But we raise concerns about what needs to be done to ensure the country gets good value for money regarding the quality of educational outcomes compared to other developing countries. We make the point that while the percentage of metric passes has improved to over 70%, if you factor in the supplementary exams, the quality thereof still remains an area of concern, and the percentage of people that could get a good bachelor pass rate is still an area of concern. And certainly we raise the point around the annual national assessments and the fact that we do not seem, at least in this point in time, to be able to meet the targeted number of graduates that get the science and technology qualifications. Moving on to social cohesion, and in this instance, I want to draw your attention to page 61, which gives a brief reference to what the country inherited in 1994. And essentially here, perhaps a little bit more so than the other sections, we make the point that for some of these indicators, there isn't pre-1994 data, so that the comparison becomes a little bit affected by that. So, for example, there would be questions around the extent to which there was voter participation. There was no voting by certain groupings, you know. There were no, whilst there were quite a number of people that were members of regional groupings, religious groupings and perhaps political groupings, that was not officially kept. In fact, it was safest if it was not known where you were a member. But we make reference to strides that have been made in this regard since 1994. Essentially, in this section, we focus on the exclusion and division of the pre-1994 era, the limited interaction, the high levels of inequality, the gender discrimination, and how the government of post-1994 has sought to address that, progressively address it, ensure political participation, ensure a shared vision, freedom of elections, and a whole range of other things that are referred to in page 61. What I would just like to highlight are just the fact that in slide 10, we make reference to the increase in voter participation in 2011 as a sign of the public confidence in our democracy. Certainly then there have been questions around whether we can maintain or revert to the voter participation rate of 1999. And there are indications that there's a slight drop in that regard. But then we also highlight key achievements like the 2010 FIFA World Cup and the impact that had on national pride. But then we make the reference to the deterioration in public perceptions in relation to race relations and the extent to which this needs to be addressed going forward. This next slide, Trevor is going to be the last one. It refers to crime. And in terms of what the country inherited in 1994, may I draw your attention to page 71. And it makes reference to the various criminal justice and security systems that needed to be amalgamated and transformed in line with the democratic constitution, but I just wanted to draw your attention to the issues around the uneven distribution of resources that existed at the time, and perhaps most importantly, the lack of legitimacy and accountability in terms of the different systems that we appointed at the time. And so, slide 11 makes reference to progress that is made against a steady decrease in crime levels, but the point we make is that the violent nature of crime is cause for concern, We also do reflect on drug-related crimes in page 75 of the development indicators and the extent to which this is an area of concern. Perhaps it's got linkages with the thematic area that looks at international relations and how our borders can be, or ports of entry can be managed, amongst other things, to limit this. And we also reflect on sexual offences. In closing, Chairperson, there are also sections on international relations, and they take the same pattern of looking at what the country inherited. That is in page 85. It gives an indication of what our foreign direct investment was like in 1994, and that really we had none, if at all. We had hardly, if at all, diplomatic relations with a few countries, and our position in 1994, or what we inherited in 1994, is significantly different to what we have at this point in time, where we have, it could be argued, at least if I may say so, that we have got a particular presence in the world. And as I understand it, we have our Pretoria is in the whole country is the second city in the world that has the highest number of embassies or representation by other countries. That stands to be verified, but I have it on good authority that we are second in terms of the highest number of embassies that are represented here. So the rest of the section then reflects on peace operations work we do, the democratically elected governments in Africa, we reflect on that as well, the real GDP growth, the trends we have in sustainable tourism. Colleagues will recall, as was indicated earlier, perhaps by the minister, the relevant minister, that unlike in other parts of the world, as a country, we're making good progress in this regard. And then the chapter looks at international relations. Lastly, Chairperson, is the good governance thematic area, and it reflects on tax administration, which could be said is one of our success stories as a country in terms of what we inherited in 1994, the growing of the tax revenue collection from 1994 to what we have in 2012-2013, the qualified audits are a matter of concern that has been raised on various fora, the corruption perception, but what I want to highlight in page 92 is the budget process compared to what we inherited in 1994, and significant strides that we have made in regard as a country. We make the point in page 92 that the 2012 Open Budget Index by the International Budget Partnership ranks South Africa only second only to New Zealand in terms of transparency in the budget process. I would like to end there and say I've come to the end of the slides. As I mentioned earlier on, we have included for the first time the reflection on infrastructure that is added as part of the annexure. And in closing, these trends that we've just presented confirm our understanding of the progress that we are making as a country and the remaining challenges. It is our view that the poverty levels are declining, but that the challenges of unemployment and inequality remain quite high. There are significant gains that have been made with specific reference to life expectancy, and these have got a positive socioeconomic implication for the country beyond just health. And when we tabled this at Cabinet, we recommended that this got approved, but what I'm tabling here is that it please gets noted. Thank you, Chairperson.
That is
Honorable Chair, we also raised the concern about the worrying violence of the crime. So it's declining in part, but essentially the concern we raised in slide 11 is that the violent nature of the crime is worrying.
Thank you very much indeed, and thank you for the presentation, and good afternoon.
think I'm in a position now, as we sit here, to interrogate every department and the findings that they've made. I think it's going to require more work from us as committee members to see which are the specific areas within employment or the social cohesion structure that we would like more information from the department and whether they have that information. So that's how I would like to see how the way forward from my point of view. But the questions I have, Chairperson, is the margins of error. Can they speak to the margins of error? For example, in Stat South Africa, you always get margins of error. You get alternate organizations, research organizations, saying different things to the same issue. So can you speak to the margins of error? And then how have departments reacted to these findings that have been made here? Is there sort of a buy-in? Are they saying, no, we don't agree with what you have concluded here, or we do agree? And then the last one I'd like to ask just for now is an exercise on the resources used versus the output stroke outcomes. It's well and good to say we've delivered 1 million houses, like Honorable Mfulo has said. But with the resources that were put to the use for development of housing, could we have not delivered 1,500,000 houses? And it's because of inefficiencies within the system, administrative systems and governance, that we couldn't meet those particular targets. So an exercise on resources versus output outcomes. Is that being done? Will it be done? And as we move to the future. The point is, could we have done better with what we have had? Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Well, I agree that there's a lot of information in the document that would require, obviously. Maybe this is we take this as a more kind of intro to this document that we have a follow up again with some engagement, so that we could be equally educated on the volume of information quite in here. And I think that we always do make this point that monitoring and evaluation could play an important role in the committee's work in terms of oversight and accountability. But as if we have sufficient time to go through this kind of education process, but we find that we don't have quite the time to actually engage. Having said that, Chair, I just want to follow up on the issue of data reliability. Really, it's a general question. You did say in a slide somewhere that what you may pick up as a data that is not accurate or comparable, that is rejected. I just want to find out on that aspect, given the reliance of other departments that also produce data. Various departments, they have their own data, and health will have their own, and so you can go down. So the quality control of data, how that is dealt with. Linked to that question is this issue of the state SA and also census 2011. Because those are going to be informing data going forward. But do you have a concern as a department about the degree of bickering with the accuracy? And in the event that happens, how do you then navigate through that? The competency question, I do see somewhere in the you make point about review, the review 203. I just want to find out the review and these, given the characterization on the problem statement, there is a consistency with what we have as the what you could have looked as a 10-year review program, and what you have here as a kind of 90 years stats or what you call indicators, which invariably also have the same thing that was raised by the Review 20 2003, who has also kind of political perspective. So I'm just trying to see the consistency of the two. Just a quick question on the two more questions. The housing, the stats, I've just mentioned to you that the various departments have various stats that they rely on, which at the end of the day inform the indicators in a global sense. If you look at housing, for an example, on the slide you mentioned, I think, 3.3 million houses, but the question I'm asking is which stats gives you that kind of figure in relation to the housing? Is it from 1994 or 1994 and in between there is an issue about those houses that were not in a good quality? The some houses that has been taken down or demolished, some of them are not quite yet under construction. So would you say the stats will calculate from the foundation, which is the foundation in this case would have been used as 1994, irrespective of what happened to the structure in the mid period? Second one is the slide that speaks to basic services. I think it speaks about water and sanitation. I just wanted to check with you the figure that is mentioned about particular access to water, the 95%. I think that's what it says. Sometimes the 95% or 90 or 80% communicate various message. Is it actually 95? And what steps are we relying on this? I mean, we can pull on the kind of oversight work that we do from the kind of water, access to water, basic water. If you go to the, what I said, Limpopo, you go to Mpumalanga, the problems that you have in terms of access. So I just want to find out states that inform the 95, is it in taking into that one where tap is not actually, the tap is there but the water is not coming out, if you understand what I'm saying. So just to get some information. The last one is that maybe the question has been asked already, is the calculation. What is the basis, the calculation of jobs to qualify into a stat, or to qualify into a stat that speaks to a job that has been created? Is it duration, or is it person hours, or is it the days, or is it a month, or is it a income? Just trying to find out this, because it speaks to the job opportunities. Because if you speak to job opportunity, you no longer speak to actual job that has been created. You speak to a broad, basically definition that does not give you the number, the head count, if you like. So if you can just explain those. But the rest, I think, is a good piece of work, both statistically and also politically. I think it's a good piece of work.
also your tonnages handled by the various harbours, your non-urban roads, your toll roads, all these things. I mean, they've definitely got some kind of economic kind of meaning to them, but it's hard just to look at it like this, and then you make your own assumptions rather than having someone come and speak you through what this actually means in terms of ourselves, maybe with putting budgets in different places and how to. And if your roads are being overused, then you know, do we then look at when we're doing appropriations, do we then, how do we then look at shuffling budgets and things like that?
Thank you, Chairperson. I know that the justice system has been very strict these days because suddenly it got interested in this safety and security thing. And the life sentences and all this might be causing the decrease in crime. But I would like to know specifically what part of it, because the general knowledge is that our policing, the quality or the qualification, whatever they call it, of our police is not that good to take people from being arrested, proper interrogation or the proper qualifications of our police. So I wonder whether the decrease in crime, is it because people are now afraid of being sentenced to jail for a long time, or is it the community structure that we have, like policing forum? Well, it leads me to want to know whether you've done the quality of police. Do we recruit the right people that caused the decrease or influence the prosecution so that the right sentences can be sent, can be done, or is the quality of our police still that low that we need to improve it so that even if the sentences which we appreciate so much are high, the basics that are done before people are arrested at the right place, do we have the right quality of people to interrogate the crime as is being reported to them, or is it still as poor as it used to be said? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you want to comment?
No. I will comment at the end, but can we allow them to respond to their question? But as Honorable Matagani has left, he wanted to know why now this report comes annually. So probably it might have been the first time that the committee. Honorable Ramatagani, you were asking whether there are politics in the report, in the bringing of the report now. I was saying that this report is produced annually, whether it's on the eve of elections or on the election year or even after. It comes annually, and we are spot on saying that we produce it every year.
Honorable members, thank you very much for the questions and comments that have been made. Very, very useful indeed. And maybe before I take some of the questions point by point, I just want to agree and appreciate the recommendation that we have a proper analysis and engagement on the development indicators. They are rich in information, and as all honorable members have said, there is a need to interrogate the data behind the data and then the reliability and validity thereof, what feeds it and where does it get linked, what are the implications for the work you do and for our work and collaboration thereof. And I suspect that certainly at the end of this meeting what we need to talk about is when would be an appropriate time where we can come as a team of outcomes facilitators and together with data persons in our department to really interrogate at length some of the key issues that are being raised here. Mine is to just take us through, at least at surface level, some of the issues that get raised, and then perhaps, as I indicated, Chairperson, we could have a discussion at the end of this regarding how we organize a day-long workshop, and it could be that we are guided on what thematic area we might want to focus on, because I have a suspicion even with 2 days or a day, you can never fully, I think, interrogate or unpack all that comes through here to do it justice. And what I want to apologize for is the assumptions I've made in presenting this, because I got the sense that perhaps I'd understood that perhaps there'd been earlier interrogation with the indicators, and it's often an unfair assumption to me, because perhaps in tabling this the right way, I should have said that for each and every page where there is a reflection on an indicator, if you open any page in the indicate in this report, it gives you an indication of what goal, what's the analysis up front, gives you the actual numbers, says what is the definition of that indicator, what is the source, as the DM says. And it's a multiple of sources in some of them, whereas in others, it's specific sources that can be used or that have been used for this. So that just by chance, I happen to be on page 7, and it speaks about per capita growth and foreign direct investment. If you look at page 7 and 6, it gives you an indication of what is the data source used for that particular table and the analysis and statements that are made there. And it gives an indication of numeric value being presented, how we are counting that, and so on. If you looked at, for example, some of the human settlements one, but I'll go into that a little bit more detail, it will say for some that it's human settlements data, it's data from a maybe National Treasury, and in some instances it can say former Department of Housing. So it gives you, at the bottom of the document, it says for each and every indicator, what is the data source. And we indicate for some what our views are about the figures being presented. In some, for example, we say that if I look at, for example, page 19, we indicate that the Knowledge Economy Index is an aggregate index that represents X, Y, Z. So it explains what this seeks to analyze. So maybe, Chairperson, having just made those brief remarks, I can just respond to some of the questions that have been raised. And perhaps, if I may, just start from the last comments that we made and then just go up. The comments around the justice system are well noted. The development indicators, to be quite honest, does not go to the detail of analyzing whether we have recruited the right person. What it does is give an indication over time what system we inherited, secondly, what surveys are used to determine the extent to which people feel safe or not. Based on the statistics, which honorable member is aware, only is released once a year in some, we then make calculations of the actual improvements or challenges thereof in terms of addressing or indicating whether progress is being made or not. If you look at that section, it, for example, gives an indication for some that there is a decline. But as I mentioned in the presentation, the violent nature of the crime is an area of concern. There are also areas, honorable member, where we make reference to the fact that there might be an increase or a decrease, but in our view, knowing the facts or figures we've got at hand, our view is that the decrease is marginal. But we do not, I must say upfront, we do not look at whether or some of the info that Honourable Member indicated is in the public domain currently around the quality of policing and all that. The indicators currently doesn't look at that. Yeah. What I would like to say, however, and perhaps it's similar to what Honourable Snell indicated, there are certain things here which we report on which are high-level assessment of performance against development indicators. Where the in-depth analysis around specific indicators and targets you perhaps might find in our outcomes work. This gives a snapshot against a certain number of indicators and provides an analysis. So, for example, the very critical question that Honourable Snell raises around the tonnage and whether there is good value for money and all that, it's a session we can organize because we have a sector expert that focuses on economic infrastructure and tonnage issues, ports and movements in that port, all the prioritized issue around moving from road to rail developments and all that are things we can come and zoom into. The indicators do not go into that level of detail, but I agree with you that part of the post this session and interrogation would be about Honourable Members advising which thematic areas they would want the two-day workshop or a meeting to zoom in on, and then we can have a much more critical analysis of what's coming out, what does it mean in terms of value for money, and what are we currently sitting with. Specific detail around tonnage, for example, is what we can offer. Yeah. Moving on to the issue around the water and sanitation and the basis for qualifying that. As I mentioned in my presentation, this one is one where we also agree is cause for concern. What we report here is on the basis of the data sources that are at the bottom, but certainly, it could not be said, as we say in the presentation, that there are not worrying issues around functionality. So 95 is a consolidated figure based on, I'm just trying to go to that section so that I can draw your attention to the actual page 38. On page 38, we make reference to this data sources that we have used for that. It includes the census data, data from Water Affairs, from DECOG, etc. But what we make as a point there is that really there is significant concern around the routine maintenance here. We raise concern around inattention to upgrading and refurbishment, leading to collapse in sanitation services. We even mention, for example, that there are worrying issues around the Free State province and the extent to which it has been able to get rid of the bucket system. So I just want to remind or inform Honourable Members that as part of some of the concerns we raised here, we worked on a report on sanitation that looked at sanitation across the country, where we go into far more detail around what have we found or what has been found on the ground. That has been tabled, I think, at the House, but I stand to be corrected, and it interrogates some of the info that comes here, because it's almost one of those where you say Province X has got a very good prevalence or a declining prevalence of let's say maybe 10% of HIV. But if you went to a district within that province, or you would find that the prevalence is actually far higher. It's not the science, it's the trickies of aggregating, because in many ways what we are saying here is that whilst there is this figure, there are pockets of very serious challenges around both the maintenance, the refurbishment, but most importantly, the functionality of a service. So you can say, yes, taps are there, or you say VIP toilets are also there, but the extent to which it qualifies as a service for people remains an area of concern, and we make that point here. Now, Now, Honorable Heldenbron, what we said around the electricity is on page 39. Yes, you saw it, so you covered. Thank you. The issue again around the housing stats, and thank you very much for that point raised, on page 36. The 3.8 is a cumulative figure up front, but there's certainly been more houses made as indicated in page 36. What this does not do, though, is to give an indication of how many of those have had to be rebuilt or are not good quality and all that. That analysis or impact of this progress over time is work that we are planning to be part of the 20-year review work, where we will say we have covered this. This is the journey, what we inherited in 1994. These are the areas for success that require achievement, but this is what the state needs to do better or strengthen going forward. It then begins to say, really, of these that have been built, which are being occupied or meaningfully used, and it's that type of analysis. So the issue we were raising is less so that this is not, the development indicators are not an evaluation. The point I was making is that it's a status of the country's performance around a select number of indicators. It has trend analysis, which say, are we making a particular trend upwards or in a particular way? It does not fully say what is the impact in the sense that we would do for the evaluation. A page on housing can never fully interrogate what impact wholly that government's intervention and others have managed to do. So it's with that in mind to sort of begin to distinguish it slightly from the development indicators and the evaluation program as we've spoken about. Just wrapping up the first page of issues that were raised, the consistency of these development indicators with the 20-year review. What we said when we first tabled the 20-year review to Cabinet and to FOSA, the DGs, the message we've always made is to say the country, in terms of provinces, in terms of government departments, in terms of the private sector, has done a numerous reviews since this country's democracy. So the premise we operated from was that the 20-year review could then not be a regurgitation of work that had been done before. But most important, it would take that work, including the 5-year review, the 10-year review, the 15-year reviews, and use them as information sources to identify areas requiring further analysis. What we also brought on board are assessment by government departments, including this. We've also commissioned the HSRC to do a report on us on research pieces that have been done that were similar to the thematic areas of the 20-year review. We took the PM, the diagnostics that were done by the National Planning Secretariat to use them to inform the 20-year review. We've taken the diagnostics that were done by DPME to prepare for the outcomes. So in many ways, it could be said that whilst there might be differences in actual figures, but in terms of trend analysis and how we think the direction is taking place, I could safely say that for many of them there are similarities, because we departed from the premise that there's pre-existing work and ours is to take that into consideration, identify areas where there were still question marks and work on those. Honorable Ramatlakane, we have elected to stay a little bit out of what Honorable Member referred to as becoming around the relevance of the since 2011 data, simply because we have feared that that's not really something we should get involved in. We have certainly, though, taken the census 2011 as one of the inputs into this, as Honourable Member will see at the bottom of the of each of the indicators we've reflected on those. And where we've used certain data with challenges, I've made specific reference to some where we've said, no, here there is a gap and we are not using this, we have done so. But I think it would be very dangerous if we begin to be involved in that. Honourable Singh, the departments and their response to this, what we've done is we've taken input from departments as well. As I mentioned earlier on, and we've looked at other states and we've analyzed accordingly. There have been areas where departments didn't completely agree with our assessment of how progress is being made. But what we have done when that has happened is we've engaged them to indicate why we think certain things are still a problem. And what the approach we take, as we've often said in this forum, is one where we say upfront that it's about ensuring that there's evidence base that informs the decisions that get made. We have to interrogate the information that's ahead of us. In general, there's a tendency to agree. But there are some where there is a lot of, I don't want to say facilitation, but you facilitate, you disagree here, you don't. But the messaging is that ultimately, as DPME, using the facts we have in front of us, we then say we opt for this, we will push this, and it's on the basis of these facts. And then, unfortunately, then there has to be a moving forward in that regard. But there are rare instances of where that happens. But our view is that in most instances where there isn't a proper backing to say something is going as well, the expectation or the mandate we are giving is to reflect that that is the case. And I think departments are beginning to buy into that. It is not an easy process, but I think it's one we are making inroads into. The very critical analysis around the resources used versus the actual outcomes, I think it's a very important one. There are some, for example, studies within the 20-year review that look at that. I know, for example, that education paper is looking at educational outcomes vis-a-vis the GDP share, the education share of the GDP. And certainly for the health section, I know that there is an analysis around, as I mentioned earlier on, is the country really getting what it's invested in? I think there is a consensus, which we've always mentioned as DPME, that part of the reason or the mandate we were given as DPME is to begin to turn the tide around this. I think the president, in communicating the need for our formation, was reflected on some of the reasons being the fact that even though the country was spending so much on education and on health, if you compare us with countries that spend less or same as we do, we simply don't get the types of outcomes we should be getting. Even with recent improvements, we still don't compare favorably with other countries, both in the African continent as a home, but also in comparison with other countries that fare far worse than us in terms of what they have. It has always been a main issue. The other questions are very critical ones around how do we calculate a job versus how do we calculate an opportunity. Is it the number of times you are employed or not? I want to say that perhaps I must make a distinction between what we define as EPWP, which, as Honourable Ramatlakane indicates, is a reflection on opportunities. It looks at opportunities. It doesn't look at a job over time. And even in the indicators, we mentioned that the opportunity may mean that a person has got more than one opportunity. If we go to that section, it reflects on that. I just have to get that I can take us there. Excuse me for a second. It's on page 24. The point we make there is that in this case at least, it looks at the work opportunity and it makes reference perhaps over time around one person's year of work being equal to this, and it makes the point that this same individual can be employed on different projects and each period of employment will be counted as a work opportunity. Now this raises concerns, some of the concerns that have been raised here, because as Honorable May said at the end, the main issue is around, you know, the huge concern around the number of people that are employed vis-a-vis some of these types of public employment programs that seek to address concerns around unemployment. There are achievements made here, but our view is that at this point in time, this program, with its limitations and strengths, simply is not progressing as rapidly as we'd want to. It takes a particular focus on opportunities. It does not assess jobs. And then the same applies to CWP, which is mostly driven or led by DCOG. And there as well, in page 25, we look at issues around opportunities, number of work opportunities. There were instances where honorable members raised a question around where do we sometimes say a figure can't be used or there are challenges around a certain figure. If you, I could please draw your attention to the data note we've got there as a concern by the PME. We say that the figures don't add up due to double counting. And we've raised this in other fora because we know that there are some limitations with regards to this. The intention is right, but the way of monitoring and tracking it so that you know what exactly you are counting and what is its impact is something that requires a strengthening. The formal types of jobs are reflected on in earlier sections in the section, and that's where we give an indication of number of jobs created. I'm looking, for example, at page 22, where we speak about the goal of increasing employment by 2014, and we make the reference that although employment has increased, total employment is still lower, and we give an indication of employment across the different sectors. Perhaps the point we don't make as starkly here is that part of the challenge, maybe we make it in earlier sections, is that in certain instances, part of addressing employment is the acknowledgement that actually private sector and cultivating innovation and entrepreneurship, so people moving to self-employment roles, has been also part of the challenge. Is that what drives employment and what doesn't, and the extent to which private sector or that an amenable environment is created for us to be able to also create jobs, encourage investment by other sectors too. Maybe in closing, the last few comments I haven't addressed is the whole issue around, if I could just have a moment, that big question around could things have been done differently, I think is another one, as I said earlier on, that can be interrogated further elsewhere. Because certainly the question has been raised that so you say X million of units created, but knowing the quality issues that have arisen since, could you have done better with less? Could you have done better with more? Is perhaps an issue that's slightly beyond the scope of this. This one says what have we done against what we inherited at a certain given point in time? Is the trend increasing or not? And what might be the drivers? It does go a little bit in depth, but perhaps what we require is interrogation of that nature in another piece of work, perhaps less so than here. I don't know, DM, if I could ask you to...
Patterson, I think the earlier comment by honorable members that this type of a report needs intense engagement so that members can then go and read and then come back and have a discussion that is proper. I think what was happening now was more questions of clarity and emphasis that they wanted to know so that as they go and read the document, they can then come back. So if Chair, you could afford that opportunity where we can come back and really engage on the report. And as members do so, if you then look at the report itself, this is the sixth report, obviously, and it tells a story every year. Some stories are improving, and some stories remain the same. So it does, if you go backwards, you will then begin to see that indeed in certain elements of the storytelling, there are those particular improvements that we are beginning to see movements on. And then there are those where we are stagnating, but also because of external factors such as economic slowdown, recessions, and then other elements, you know, that always are beyond our own control. So that story will continuously be reflected in that. And as you read it, then also go to the Millennium Development Goals. How is the country doing? What is this report saying in relation to those goals? It may not be specific to each and every goal, but then as you read the goals, you will then begin to see how the country is doing on the eight goals and the targets, whether we have achieved on them, whether we have not achieved, and so forth. Moreover, because in September at the United Nations General Assembly, all countries will be receiving a report from the high panel that was appointed by the Secretary General of the United Nations, who will then be presenting the post-2015 agenda, whether we continue with the Millennium Development Goal targets and the targets as were agreed, because in 2015 they are coming to an end. That was the target in which the whole world said we'll have achieved, both the developed and the developing world. But indeed, indications are such that Sub-Saharan Africa has not yet achieved quite a number of the goals. So there may be certain goals that we will want post-2015 to be on the agenda, and there may be new goals that has resurfaced, particularly around the issues of climate change, which is something that is now beginning to be understood by human beings. Because at the time of the adoption of the Millennium Development Goals, though it's one of the goals, the goal there is limited. The targets are very limited. They don't express much on what is happening today around the issues of climate change. So now that the world has now engaged sufficiently and they know where the problem is, what are the solutions, we might then have to put new targets on the environment goal, and then ensure, therefore, that elements of the climate change are there. So please, as you engage with the report, if you could also look at that. But also look at the five key priorities that the government has identified as the critical priorities for us to make a move as a country. One of them is the economic growth and job creation. And obviously, the presenter, Unulu, has really, you know, begin to explain on some of the questions relating to employment in particular. How are we doing as a country and so forth. On education, you will then have to also look at it. The excess, when we relate it to the Millennium Development Goals, indeed we are almost at 90-95% because of the many infrastructure schools are now available and so forth, so forth. There may still be challenges of mass schools in certain areas and so forth. But access generally of children wanting to go to school, getting facilities to go to, has improved to almost around that. The issues are quality of education itself. And I think that will be the issue, obviously, that might then be engaged to say, what is it that we are doing as a country to ensure, therefore, that now that we've got access almost correct, and with a few percentages here and there, what is it that we are going to be doing overall around the issues of quality, and then so that we can then get the outcome of what we're investing in. On health, almost also access is improved, but then we then continuously hear stories of medications and tablet shortages or this and that,
And then we then have then to say, whilst we improve on access and indeed there's a volume of access, what is it that we're doing around issues of equipment, the issues of medicines and tablets, and then the professional people themselves. And then the fighting crime and corruption, I know that the report speaks more on the side of fighting crime, but also corruption is one element that ought to also be elevated. And just look at how we are beginning to be rated on that particular issue, international transparency, and then others, I think, they've used the models and then what they say about us. And then the last of the five key priorities, the rural development. So as you read, just look at government programs vis-a-vis what is the economic indicator in the saying to us. I'm glad that the issue on the jobs and then work opportunities was explained around the issues of public works programs, expanded public works programs, community work programs, which in themselves they create some sort of a work opportunity, sometimes 6 months, sometimes 12 months, sometimes more than that. Particularly when you go to the health sector, the social development, and then health, the caregivers that are there, then you find that they are quite long in the environment, you know, of giving that critical service load. And quite a number of them, they have been prepared for a job because a lot of them now are being recruited when opportunities of a job arises in the health sector. They go in as auxiliaries, they go in as health workers of some sort, no longer just as only the caregivers, but then because they are now exposed, they know what is happening, and then they came in as nothing, came in as just people who are looking for an opportunity, and they get converted. So an opportunity has been created, an income has been given, and then indeed some form of training, you know, goes with that particular environment. So let's not just say it has an opportunity that just give an income. It has two other elements that goes with it. So, and I think that if you could go into the research, you'll find that quite a number of those are going that way. When you go to the NRSEC program, the minister was illustrating the story, that quite a number of them are even going into entrepreneurship. Having gained experience in NRSEC, whatever training that they get in that particular environment, some of them pursue that training ultimately and then become, you know, entrepreneurs on their own and then begin to see an opportunity that exists and then exploit on that particular opportunity. So the work opportunity, therefore, it's also a skill and preparing young people to go forward. On the international front, I think it was well spoken. I know that the members did not raise. And I know that the report might not be as emphatic, but look at the situation. In Africa, we had 10, our economy was active in 10 countries, but today over 40 countries in the continent, that because of us opening embassies and missions in those particular countries, we're able to unlock the potentials and the opportunities that exist. Now, South African companies can now be seen visibly in almost over 40 countries in the continent. Now we're also beginning to look ourselves in other markets, in the Latin America, in Asia, and then so forth. Then, continuously, when you read these reports, go into the quarterly labor statistics, because they come every quarter, to see if some of the statistics used, how they move up and down, depending on the external factors and what is happening in the world. And obviously, by the time you publish this book, the quarterly labor statistics might have said now something else, because they were released 2 or 3 weeks ago. And at the time of the completing of this particular research, we might have pointed at a particular issue. So there's that particular movement and refreshness of information. But I'll just really take the comment of Honorable Ramatlagani that the data itself, how reliable and how do we quantify it, and that what is the quality assurance on that particular data. There's some challenge that we are still engaging on. I did engage with the DG of performance and monitoring that. All departments have their own data, and then they have been supplied that data by the service provider that we might engage. And one of the dominant service providers came to me and said, is now realizing that this data is all over, but there's no consolidation point. There's no quality assurance point. And then he thinks that the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation is the one that could be that, so that it remains the information data for each department, but we have access to it, so that from time to time we do our own independent analysis, and we can then assure and then ensure therefore that the quality, so that when we give information to the public space, indeed there's no doubt on that particular information as to how reliable it is, we can stand up and then really talk and then tell a story about that. So we're looking at that particular possibility. And unfortunately, the president also recently in one of the cabinet meetings said he thinks that more capacity must be given to the Department of Performance and Monitoring. I know the DG came back frowning from that meeting saying, oh, the president is going to give us more work. And it means now we must look around for capable people who could really have to come in and really deliver on that particular expectation and the mandate, because an expectation is now there to say we need to offer more and give more. You were right also around the issues of water access. On the fifth report, that was one of the major debates, you know, that arose when we were interrogating the report in the cabinet. One issue was that what is the difference between what is water access? The officials were saying water access is the infrastructure. So when every house has a tap and has everything, that is access. And we are saying no, but access in our own understanding is when you open the tap, there will be water coming out. So now it's a matter, I'm not sure whether it's English or it's a is it English? So semantic or whatever it is. But we then argued with them to say water access must be water itself, you know, that gives your life, the thing that you can use to cook, to drink, to wash, and so forth. Infrastructure must be infrastructure. So we asked them to divide that tool of measurement. And I hope that they are working on it too, then so that they can say 90% water infrastructure, but 70% water access. So we need to get that story, because sometimes you think that we have covered all the households and everyone has access to water. But you watch TV in the evening, you see people having buckets and then going to the river to go and fetch water and so forth. Then you wonder what reports are we receiving. So we're correcting on that particular measurement tool, and it's an intervention that the DPME has spotted on, and then I hope they will be following up. And in future, when they will report, we'll then be able to distinct that to say coverage is so much, but access is this and that. So it's better that way when you say network coverage, it's so much, and then the water access is this particular percentage. Chair, let me also say that assumptions will always be there when you deal with development indicators, because we are dealing with the economics environment also in that. And in economics, it's one study that is based on assumptions. But your assumptions must be closest to the truth. They shouldn't be too distant from the truth, otherwise you get discredited if your assumptions are not closer. It's like when Prime Minister Winston Churchill once said during the hardships of the 1930s, he called all economists into the room and said, please tell me what solution can I give to the nation, because people are complaining of unemployment and so forth, jobs and so forth. And then the economists all came, and then each one will then say, on one hand, and then they will tell a story. On another hand, they will tell a story. So all of them came in one hand, the other hand, one hand, the other hand, one hand. And he then said, I want a one-handed economist now. No longer one hand and the other, just one hand. So I don't know whether we have such a one-hand economist, honorable chairperson. But in conclusion, sorry. So on that note, therefore, I just want to say, I think let's take the report as have been noted, questions raised, and then allow for members to really go and read, and then allow for a discussion that will be more longer, and in that way, we'll be able also to get a betterment of your views and ideas as honorable members. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. I'm worried this meeting looks like it's going to be very short. We had a very long meeting this morning. I thought that we could extend this one. To be with you. You know, Honorable members, thank you very much. But I think that I'm sure the issues that have been raised is clear that the department is taking them seriously. But maybe the other point, Honorable Minister, that you have not mentioned here, and maybe that we could consider, is that the development indicators cut across government service delivery issues. The number of departments, whether it's in clusters, sometimes, or individually. I think that maybe going forward, maybe it would be useful just to break them down, you know, so that on those, on specific issues, then we can invite specific portfolio committees so that they can be aware of what is happening in their areas. I mean, over and above what the members are suggesting, that maybe we need to have given the opportunity to go through and have a thorough discussion one day. But maybe when we have that discussion, I think that we should be able to raise questions. Ms. Gasser says, this report is about the status quo. I'm using that word carefully. But at the time when the report was compiled. But maybe if we engage with the department, then we can be able to take the question further in terms of these are the findings and so on. Where to from here? I think that perhaps those are some of the issues that we could look at. But the other thing, Honorable members, about this question of the EPWP, just to, I'm not speaking for the department, but what we know is that the president did indicate, I think, in the 2009 State of the Nation address, that over this period of time, these are the number of job opportunities that would be created. Maybe for us, it would be more important to monitor that. Have that been achieved or not achieved, or perhaps what are the challenges? But generally, we have had the Department of Public Works, I think on a number of occasions, coming to the committee to explain why the what is the difference between these work opportunities that are produced by the EPWP vis-a-vis your sustainable, what you call it, jobs. So that, honorable members, so that ourselves, we don't, what you call it, confuse the, what you call it, the question of whether do we need this EPWP program or we don't need it, because people are going to work shorter periods or what. What I have thought we would do at the end is that, I mean, over this last 5 years, I don't know if we'll still be there in future, but we have had a number of discussions with the public works, and I think that we have tried to improve on public works, that maybe we can
the dates on the basis of the minister, on the basis of the minister and the deputy minister's availability and DG, but the proposed plan is for as soon as possible. I'll hand over to Bonnie to indicate when might be the actual dates. But as I mentioned earlier on, yes, the DG is back on his feet and the DM is not free. But the plan, as I mentioned earlier on, is for it to be released to the press and we have a think tank session. So please open the tent.
Launch where we're going to have a critical thinking forum where industry experts will be invited to interrogate and unpack it and like give insight onto the indicators the way they see it. And this is scheduled to take place on the 23rd of August on a Friday. Yes, I'm still getting there. And then we'll have, on the 20th is a media launch, and for the Critical Thinking Forum, it will be inviting industry experts and the SCOA members. And I hope you're happy, Honorable Federal. And opinion makers in the industry. So that's the plan for the media launch of the development indicator.
Thank you, DM. Thank you, Chairperson. When we took this to the Joint Cabinet Committee, Cabinet also expressed an interest in actively participating in the Critical Thinking Forum. So the plan is for us to invite across the spectrum to make sure there's representation.
Chair, I wanted to say, therefore, that indicates that South Africa is a better place to live in. And we are very confident that indeed we can tell a story. 1994, pre-1994, what was it? And then post-1994, what it is. And that's why Honorable Ramatlakane was worried about this report now being presented now. So otherwise, it's a story to tell to the South Africans that South Africa indeed is a better place to live in. And it will continue to be. Thank you.
Now, thank you very much, DM. And I think that as members, we're not very much excited about the possibility of being invited because we've never been invited before. Well, if there's a first time or surprise, we'll appreciate that. But all right, members, well, I understand that the next meeting we were supposed to meet on the 14th, no? with basic education on ASID. I'm informed, reliably informed, now that they have called to request a postponement. Well, I'm not sure, because I know that tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, there will be a workshop on the infrastructure on ASID. Now, all the requests, in other words, the information that we wanted is already information that they would have dealt with tomorrow and Thursday, because there's a two-day workshop. The committee had actually send an invitation to us to attend that workshop tomorrow and Thursday's workshop on infrastructure. Though their program would cover infrastructure, but other issues that pertain to the committee. But we got discouraged when Honorable DM, you're no longer there in that office. We found that if we want to go there, maybe want to attend, we'd have to use our own tickets and look after ourselves. Maybe because it was the kind of a short notice. But well, I think that there's not, it's still fine because I thought that we would meet them on the 14th. Now we'll come back with the date, latest date to meet them. But I've just got the information now. I'm not sure why they can't, they won't be ready on the 14th. So, but I'm sure the program is there. We will be advised about the next meeting, but the program obviously has got the dates for the next meeting. For now, Honorable Harold Blom, there's a by-election tomorrow? What is that?
I had the opportunity to also look through the other document that was circulated earlier by the secretary. The minutes of the previous meeting. And my suggestion was that we adopt those minutes.
I'll second the Honorable Chair.
So that even the issues that we raise in those minutes could then receive attention. Otherwise, they become a draft minutes. Yeah, so I just wanted to move that we adopt those minutes.
Honorable Chair, I just need clarity. Which minutes are we adopting? The minutes of the 5th of...
It was presented to us last week because we are supposed to... So they just gave them to us again.
Let's do them one by one. Let's just do them one
maybe
by one.
Maybe Honorable Ramadagano was
going to
attend to them.
Chair, we'd rather do it quickly while we've got a quorum of 7, because just now if somebody leaves, we'll be in trouble.
So, Honorable, I think you are now you're proposing that you adopt the minutes on the 5th of March. Honorable Matakana has proposed. Honorable Singh has seconded. Which is the other, what you call it, date, by the way? Not the 4th of September, the 26th of March. Eh?
Because a question from Honorable Member
Thank you.
very businesslike and finish, please.
Officially, the meeting is adjourned now.